February 2nd, 1981, 1:30 p.m., Hearing Room 137, Orientation, HARP Tax Relief. Jim Scherzinger, Economist, Legislative Revenue Office, Energy. Jim Scherzinger, Economist, Legislative Revenue Office. If time permits, Timber Tax, Terry Drake, Economist, Legislative Revenue Office.
Had to be in Portland to take care of some details because of a theft they had, and so she might be here a little bit later. Okay, we'll begin as a subcommittee, and we have in our continuing dialogue and orientation Jim Scherzinger, who will take us through the HARP portion. And are you going to cover the rest of the tax relief? We've already had that, basically, through...
Well, we'll say a little bit about it.
Okay.
As you know, HARP is property tax relief to the low and middle income Oregonian, up to 17.5 in household income at current schedule. Basically, HARP is determined by two things, or your HARP payment as a taxpayer is determined by two things, your household income and the property tax that's billed to you after your 30% relief payment. Those two things determine the HARP payment. Now, the household income works into it as being translated into a maximum relief payment. So for each household income, according to the schedule, we have a maximum payment. And that payment is on the first thing. This is a part of a report that I've just taken out a few pages of. And if you look over on the right side under the new maximum relief, that is the maximum relief payment at each household income level. So household income translates into a maximum payment according to that schedule. And the second thing, your property tax after the 30% relief, you get the lower of the two. So either the maximum payment there or your property tax after the 30% relief. It's as simple as that.
You get the greater of those?
You get the lesser of those.
Lesser.
Either the maximum payment according to the schedule or your property tax.
Okay, so in essence, it should not be more than your tax bill.
Yeah, it can't be more than the property tax payment.
But it can.
Property tax bill can't be more than the maximum payment.
It can, though, because you're working with lag data.
Right. Well,
and so I know of at least one case where a senior citizen got about $34 to put in his pocket more than his than
it
that year's
tax bill.
Yeah, and it can. And I heard about those, too.
Right. Yes. We were going to get to that. The household income is not the same as income on the income tax return. It's a broader measure of income. It includes things that aren't taxable, like Social Security. The losses you can take are limited, so you can only take capital losses up to $1,000 or business losses up to $1,000. All of capital gains is included, not just 40% as it is on the income tax. So it's a broader measure of income. And it is the income of the head of the household when you're not married, and it's the income of the husband and wife when you're married. So the children's income is not included. The payment is made in October, but it's based on the previous year, and this is where we're getting into Senator Powell's comment, that although it's intended to be an advance payment of your tax, that's why we make it in October, in fact, it's based on the tax in the previous year. And so, to the extent your tax is not the same last year as it was this year, then the payment will not necessarily be the same as the tax you have to pay. And in fact, I'd say on average it's probably less than that, since property taxes tend to grow from year to year. Although there is a counter effect in there, because this pays you on the amount billed to you, does not take into account any discount that you might get if you pay early.
Yeah, Jim.
I'm sure it would be an administrative headache, but it's too bad that when we get below a certain income level, that we can't just pay it and say your property tax is forgiven. Because I think there's more ill will toward the whole program. Even now, for example, the situation I gave you with a man getting $34 more than he owed, he thought he'd been taken because his HARP check was reduced because of the new property tax relief program. And he thought that was his money. And after a 2.5 hour discussion, he kind of agreed with me, but said, I'll watch next year. Because he still thought something was haywire in Denmark. And he thought that we had worked up a system where we would give it to him, but yet we'd take it away from him so that he'd end up in a more negative position. And to those people where there's a $30, $40, $50 error the other way, where they have to pay, just to a lot of people, that's something they didn't expect. If it was all paid last year, and then suddenly this year, they owe $50 because the tax rate went up and you're based on your old system, they say, my gosh, in Albany, I would imagine in Albany now it's really going to happen because they got a substantial increase in their city tax rate. And some of those folks are going to be reimbursed based on a previous tax bill. And I think they're probably a lot of them are going to have to come up with some money. And it's going to be a shockwave to them. Is there any
look at it?
Is that administratively
the possible? Primary difficulty there is that incomes change from year to year.
Okay.
So you've got to have an annual application. Now,
they'd still have to file.
So you're probably talking about still having it filed at the state level and then having the state certify the assessor that this person is of the appropriate income.
Yeah, but you
income.
Could take a level of income and put a line below that and you just say it's forgiven too, couldn't you?
That's true, but you still would have to apply to show your income is below
that. You'd have to apply, but you wouldn't have any other calculation if you hit that mean level. That's what he's talking about.
Yeah, right. And then, of course, the question would be there is whether you want the state pick up the loss or whether you'd want it to go on the other property.
That is true. I guess the number one question, how much would it cost if we were to do that? Figure out.
Yeah, we can figure something out. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, seems like something even a little simpler, you know, leaving the formula the way it is, you know, leaving the fact that some people that were trying to pay their whole property tax are still paying a few dollars because their taxes go up and all of that. Would it be, is there any way possible for the HARP payment to be paid directly to the county so that the people that aren't billed for that tax, such as the way the 30% is. The 30% is paid directly to the county and reduces their bill. What I'm saying is, and I asked the same question 4 years ago, that was before the 30% plan was intact, before we already did it with respect to paying the counties. My question is whether, administratively, how difficult would it be to do the same thing with the HARP payment, to pay it, you know, directly to the county and take it right off their tax bill before that bill is sent to them.
It's something that would be easier now that we have the homestead system and we have the homestead application process. And in fact, the assessors are required to mail their roll into the Department of Revenue of all the homestead payments that they've approved so that the department can audit it.
Mr. Chairman, I would really like to pursue that further. I think if we could make that change, it would be a very positive change.
I think it would be from our perspective. Again, I worry about the public perception of that. I agree with you, and we can look at it, and I wouldn't object to that at all. But because I've thought a lot about it, too, and I think if we made that change, it should have been made either when you were talking about it 4 years ago or no later than 2 years ago.
2 years
because
ago,
we started this program, and a lot of people got that difference between the bond indebtedness and the 30% that they had to pay. They didn't understand it. And now suddenly we come along with a new billing system. It says, now, wait a minute, you're not getting your HARP check anymore, but you owe us some money. And, you took it to us again, and even if we expanded HARP benefits, that public perception of not, number one, not getting the check, and realize that, for example, the guy I talked to, he had every single tax record for the last 6 years. I mean, the guy, he keyed on that. I mean, that was more important to him than they could have increased his
mobile home space rent, they could have doubled it if he lived in a mobile home, and I don't think he'd have cared, but he cared about those tax statements from the government. It was him and the government, and he was going to keep the government straight. And I think a lot of people are that way, and we'd have to consider that as we're going through. What's this going to do to people when they find out all they get now is a bill and no check?
Yeah, well, I get a lot of complaints also from constituents that don't like the idea of government giving them one money with one hand and mm-hmm. taking it back from the other hand. They don't understand that. They think that that is just designed to create more bureaucracy, and you know they really see that as a boondoggle. They don't understand the difference between tax payments to county government and and getting money from the state to pay that. You know, they don't understand the difference between levels of government. All they understand is that government's giving them a check today, and tomorrow they're giving them a bill. And they say, well, why do you do it that way? Why don't you just pay it directly? I really think that it would, overall, that public perception of government would be better if we could pay it direct.
Yeah. Again, if we can write the message that goes into it, like we try to
exactly,
do
exactly, very carefully, and very right. carefully it should spell out that we paid 30%, which deduct down to this much, and then your homeowner renter property tax relief is this much, and that takes you down to $52 or $25 or whatever, or zero.
I'm sure that, although it certainly would be easier now than it was before, it still would be substantial.
Well, can we find out how hard?
I'm sure the assessors will be glad to come in and tell us how hard it would be.
Well, why don't you give them a part answer?
Excuse me, one more thing. It appears to me that it would be a boom to the counties and to their collections procedure to have that money guaranteed paid direct, because delays in collections is one of the costs to that counties have to write into their property tax system. I mean, they would still have that, but it seems like it would decrease some if they were getting that big block of money direct from the state.
Senator Day.
Well, I think before you bring the county assessor, I think what we ought to do is try to get together a position memo, the possibility of a set of alternatives. You can do this, look at the income level of forgiveness, figure out how much it costs, or any other suggestions we could do to streamline the thing and point by point, and make them address it. Tell us why it will not work, why the loss of the revenue, all the consequences.
Try to figure out the optimal way of doing it.
That's right. It'd offer maybe three or four different right. sets of alternatives, but at least we could look at the entire picture, because I agree with you, this idea of, at a certain level, for God's sakes, we waste more time playing with it than we should even cost-wise. It just simpler if we have a floor and say, look, that's it.
Would you in every case want to look at the state paying it as opposed to just letting it?
I think you ought to show both. Yeah.
Okay. Just go ahead and let it shift in some cases.
Yeah.
Okay.
And show what it would cost the county or where the shift is or what it would cost the state to pick it up. Sure.
Right. Okay.
Pardon, Mr.
No, that's fine.
Okay. The next thing, we have a couple of graphs, or the next page over there, we have a graph that shows the principal effect of the HARP system is a change in the incidence of the tax. Whereas before the HARP and the 30% program, the property tax decreases as a percent of income. So as your income goes up, your property tax decreases as a percent of it. The effect of the HARP and the 30% program combined is to make it increase slightly as a percent of income. And that primarily was what the HARP program was designed to do, to lower the taxes for the low and middle income. This only shows it up through 18,000 there, which is about the maximum HARP level.
I was talking to people in California. Describing the program.
Describing what?
Our program we have here. They'd be delighted if they could get something just like it.
Yeah.
Because it is a progressive
program. Yeah. Mr. Chairman,
Senator.
If you carried this on out past 18,000, wouldn't it start to decline again?
I think it pretty much flattens out and maybe declines slightly. I think Ron's done that. We don't really have as good a data past that point, since we've got the HARP data right here. We have all that nice HARP data, but we don't really have good data out past that point is why he didn't do it, but I would bet that it probably does begin to decline slightly.
The reason I would think it would decline is because people, as their wealth increases, tend to spend proportionately less percentage of that on housing, the total income on housing. I think there's statistics to prove that. And so take a person with a $100,000 income would spend a less percentage of their total income on housing than a person with a $20,000 income. And as a result, I would think that, that their property taxes as a percentage of their total income would decline.
I was going to say, I'd probably decline slightly as you go out for it. Let's see. The next page shows the percent of taxpayers what I call effectively exempt as a result of the HARP and 30% combined. And I use sort of effectively exempt because you have to take into account that it's based on last year's taxes, even though it's an advance payment of next year's. So what we're looking at here is how many people got what's called a full refund. And that's about 30% of all households got a full refund.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Trope.
If we didn't have the 30% program tied to the HARP, what percentage would get the full refund?
Then it's 18 there. See, that's under the old system, before the new expanded HARP, and before the 30% program, it was about 18%. And now, with the new program, the expanded HARP and the 30%, it went up to about 30.
If we increase the minimum income up to, say, 20,000, how much greater percentage?
It would not. Increasing that income wouldn't affect it that much. It's making the whole schedule go up. That does it, because the people you're pushing over, as the schedule goes like this, well, these people down here at the 17.5 level aren't getting very much. So it's these people up in here, as you shift this thing out, that are now getting a higher payment that are increasing their percentage. So in fact, if you make it go out like that just to get to a higher level, you are going to get some people in here at a higher percentage. It's not these people up here. It's raising the payment above in the schedule that's doing that.
With the 30% program, are we getting a higher income level of people who just are exempt? If you put the two together.
Right, 30%. In effect, yes. You're getting, it's not strictly tied to income, but some people, it depends on how much your tax is in the first place. So if you have you might be up here at 10,000, but if you don't have much of a home, you might be getting a full refund, whereas somebody who has a big house that's at 5,000 that particular year won't be, because their taxes are more. So it's not strictly tied to income, but yes, in effect, you're moving this income level out on average by increasing the payment at that level. Now, this 30% program, figure there that's in there, is a figure for this last biennium. And if you just leave the system alone, of course, as property taxes go up, that figure would just sort of naturally tend to fall.
Jim, that 30% includes renters?
That one includes renters, too.
What percentage of the total of the 30% would be renters?
I don't know. I can find out.
Do we have
a bigger percentage of renters than homeowners.
Maybe.
So like it might be 25 for homeowners and 35 for renters or something like that. Because renters typically are lower income.
And so a greater percentage of them would be totally bought out.
Would get a full 17% of their, as we're getting into the renters to see how they work in the program.
But the 30%, with the 30% and the new HARP program, that figure of 30% of all households now being totally refunded, their property tax being refunded, that includes renters.
That's right.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Day.
looking at if we were just take a crystal ball, and as I figure this governor's estimate of the budget, he's projecting about a 12% increase in funds. That's the way I figure that. Give or take a tenth of a percent or so.
Right, total for the both programs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have Have you done any projections of what you see? If we take our level of growth in that program and property, have you projected that out over what we're looking at the next couple biennials? What you foresee the growth on that? Do you think it's going to be a higher percentage increase, or what's your projection? Have you looked at that phase?
On the thing that drives the 3% program is the property tax.
And I'm looking at actual gross, and we're, you know, what do you think actuals are going to...
I don't think that the property tax levies are going to grow faster than personal income in the state, which means that if we limited expenditures to personal income in the long run, that revenue should increase faster than the appropriation for the 30% program. On the other hand, it appears that levies have risen substantially this last year. In fact, they rose 17%. And that had I think the increase over this last year, you can see there in the 30% program, was about 16%, which was a pretty substantial increase. So over 1 year, you might get a pretty big jump. But I don't think in the long run you're going to beat out personal income.
But I think that was a phenomenon of two things. First of all, the local governments had a chance to get in when some relief was really there. People could see it, and they maybe moved towards tax base, and really getting to even a number of districts going for two-year budgets and things of that nature where they can see some stability. But the chance of that reoccurring, I think, is probably remote. What do you think?
Well, I think that's pretty accurate. I think that it won't be that high for a number of reasons. One, this year the AV ballot limit is now, the inflation indicator is 10.6 as opposed to 14.3 last year. And secondly, you did have a lot of new tax bases this time. A third of the school districts got new tax bases.
That's true.
And so that all of those together combined to have those big levy jumps, and that was nowhere near the long-term trend. It was way above it.
Mr. Chairman, some of the school districts that got new tax bases are finding, though, with the decline in what they're expecting to get basic school support, they may have to go after an AMP ballot. At least I heard from one of such. Is that tight?
Yep, they will. Mr. Chairman, I got a question about the relationship of HARP and the 30% and the present budget, 7981. I'm looking at your figures on the bottom of page 12. I guess it's a research paper. The page that's numbered page 12.
Right.
And you can see that using the exact same formula, and that's what the governor's anticipated, right?
Right.
Exact same formula, that there's a considerable decline in the cost of HARP and a considerable increase in the cost of the 30% program. And I understand why that is.
Right.
But it still bothers me. And I, because if you carried that out and, you know, if we stayed with the same schedule to infinity, HARP would continue to decline and the 30% would continue to increase, and as that happens, the progressivity of the program declines considerably. You with me?
That's right.
I'm right. Okay. Now, to remedy that, I would like to see us maintain at least approximately the same ratio of HARP to the 30% that we had in this biennium. And there are various ways that we could do that in order to maintain approximately the same ratio of progressivity that we have in the property tax. There are various ways that we could do that. We could increase the HARP payments by putting, you know, by increasing the schedule all the way down the line, you know, moving the line over. And then to make up for that, we would have to somehow decrease the amount of money in the 30%, assuming that we wanted to put the same number of dollars into property tax relief that the governor has recommended. And we could decline the 30% either by lowering the percentage, and I would not favor that, or by lowering the ceiling, which is at 800, down somewhat to reduce the total payment.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Trump.
Yeah. When we were fooling around with the 30% 2 years ago, I suggested lowering the ceiling. I think it was to 500, and was told that it would not really shave off all that much money.
In fact, we just this weekend I worked up the numbers.
Well, but the point is, over time, it would you'd have more and more people bumping into that. And so if you do bring it down, you do protect the integrity of the progressivity.
That's right.
I think.
But you wouldn't find yourself enough money.
No, that's what somebody said. We got to lower that ceiling to $500 to get some extra money. And I said, well, try $5 if you really want some extra money, because you're not going to get it by going from $800 to
$500. Mr. Chairman, you understand what I'm saying,
yes,
about the relative relationship of the 30% with the HARP,
mm-hmm,
and how if we just leave the figures exactly how they were, we have a declining progressivity. And I'm opposed to that. I would think most of the members of this committee would be. Given more and more of the property tax relief to wealthier and wealthier people, and less of it to the people that really need it.
I think, if I can remember, lowering it to 700, this time I figured it was about 1.9 million in savings. And these are highly preliminary because I'm getting some better data from the counties, but so many people are interested in this that I've got.
Is this for the existing biennium or for 8183?
For 8183.
Okay.
So that's actually, this is substantially higher than we had for 7980 or for 7981. I think it was 3.9 when you lower it to 600. And I can't remember the figure, but it was somewhere like 7 when you get down to 500. So you're not picking up much money by lowering it. The average relief last year was about $212, somewhere.
Yeah. At some point, though, you do start picking up significant amounts. For example, at about 400, I'll bet you that it starts jumping.
Well, not if it's about 13 or so. I've got the figures in the other room.
What would it be at 300?
I didn't go down that far. You start picking up a lot there.
Start meddling with him.
Yeah. You can go up, and the department now has got computer tapes for the big counties, and they've got the whole roll. The whole homestead roll for the smaller counties that are still working by hand. And you can go through some of those smaller counties in eastern Oregon, and you can go through page after page, and you won't see one going over $400. And even some of the bigger counties, I think I got a printout of Lincoln County in my office, and it's got something like two people up at 800 and six of them above 700.
It goes back to the old saying, the rich don't pay the taxes. All those rest of us,
or some of the,
well, you
the
know,
urban counties are getting up to those high levels.
Yeah.
Primarily.
In percentage terms, it's
all those folks that live in the West Hills.
That's all those
McCoy
people.
And I don't worry about them. We don't represent them.
It's not the people living in the West Hills, because they don't have kids anymore. They don't have the school problems. The kids out in the flat, like me, that are still raising a family that has to have a new school in their tax code area.
They've
all
got
the time.
Big houses in the West Hills worth $300,000-$400,000.
Somebody told me today the average house in California now is that's selling is $150,000 or something like that, or $115,000 or something. It just jolts my feelings. Can you imagine that?
Sure.
Turn
it the referendum measure you submitted, House Bill 24, whatever it was, to the people for ratification. Now, what did that obligate us to do with that?
Nothing.
Are we not obligated to continue the 30% progress?
Well, not other than the fact that
politically we are.
Yeah, I think there are political overtones.
It's Measure 6 that had the provision in it that said you couldn't get rid of HARP. That was Measure 6 that had the provision that said you couldn't get rid of HARP.
I just couldn't remember how the referendum was worded. It was just simply ratification of what we had done.
Right, and it's not
no
a constitutional amendment.
Yeah, it just said, do you want to continue?
And any legislator that votes against this in the future will get axed in the next election.
No, I didn't say that.
With the idea of just continuing it for the rest of this biennium.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a political judgment.
Yeah.
The question did not say for when and how long. And it's an enactment of the legislature.
It's not a constitutional amendment.
It's not a constitutional amendment, so it can't be bound. But, Jim, is there a budgeted amount for county administration of the program into the next biennium?
No, there is a bill that's in the House Revenue Committee right now to include in the budget.
How much?
There, it's blank.
A want to take.
What do you think?
I don't know what they're asking for.
Since they're not here, they won't get it. Next.
They're not here. $7 million.
I think that's right. It's okay. $5 or $7 million.
Yeah, now, like the total biennial cost at the bottom is $480.6 million. Is that correct?
For this biennial.
For the next biennial.
No, 538.
538.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're looking at last.
Okay, 538.8.
Right, and that does. Neither of those figures includes the costs to the local
government. Well, what I was getting at is I understood the Department of Revenue sent to the Executive Department a figure higher than 538.8, but it was shaved. Do you know what the figure they sent over was?
I did.
540 something?
I think it was more than that.
550, 560?
Yeah, some of them were in that range.
So 12 to 20 million more?
Yeah, it could easily be. I could find that out too. I don't have that.
Well, one of the reasons is I don't know why that was shaved, other than maybe just that was the last adjustment made prior to balancing things, but somehow somebody's got to come to grips with that difference.
I think they're cutting it pretty close there. So we have to get down and do our own full analysis and find out where they got the number. Or either that, or there have to be some real big adjustments. If you don't change the fiscal years of the district, then you'd be getting all that money in May. And I don't know. I don't know how you do that.
Yeah. Okay. So the application dates are all the same. All different.
No. Yeah. Right. They're not the same. The homeowner on the HART program. Date is April 15th for the application date, plus 3 years. So it's just like the income tax. If you have a refund due, the statute of limitation runs out after 3 years. So there's a normal filing date for the income tax, April 15th, plus 3 years. Same for HARP on the renter. And the same for the 30% on the renter.
What does that 3 years mean? I don't understand that.
Well, if you have a refund due on your income tax, you don't have to file by April 15th filing date. That's normal for the income tax. You've got, in effect, 3 years after that date before you can file for that year.
An amended form.
I see.
Well, you don't even have to do it amended. If you haven't filed the form to begin with, you just go back and get one of those old ones and file it.
But you pay the penalties and all that?
You know, there's no penalty since you didn't owe any tax.
Oh, okay.
See, these are all refunds.
Okay.
It's handled just like income tax.
So you can go back and claim those refunds even though you did not have a tax liability?
That's right. If you with money was withheld from you, or if you're due a property tax refund, you can still file for up to 3 years after the normal filing date. The only penalties that are applied for late filing of your income tax are if you owe tax and you didn't pay it.
So if a youngster was working in the summers, in their high school years, sophomore, junior, senior year, and withholdings were being taken, but yet they had no tax liability, they could wait till their senior year and then file and get it all at that time.
Right, and they wouldn't get any interest.
Well, they also wouldn't spend it all on cars and that sort of thing. So they'd have some money for their first year of college. It's not a bad plan. I might just tell my boy that that's the way the law is. You can't ask for it back yet.
You can pass a law and you can balance the budget down.
Yeah. Temporarily.
How about just mandating an annuity for him? That way you get some interest anyway.
And the filing date for the 30% of the homeowner is April 1, or 30 days after you buy a home. So if you buy a home on May 1st, you've got 30 days after that time to file. Last year there was an extension to September 1st, but I don't know. I don't think we'll have one this year. You missed the date, And that's the normal date for property tax exemptions. It's April 1st. Of course, there are exceptions to a lot of those, too.
Okay, the law right now would not allow an extension. We'd have to pass one if there were to be, if, or does the director still have the power to grant an extension?
The basis that he made that decision was a hardship, I believe, and I'm not sure whether he could use the same argument this year, because I think he's essentially arguing that if people didn't know the date.
The problem is that I just don't think that we can expect, as often as we change things and percentages and all that kind of stuff, it's just hard for me to think that the people out there can remember every date and thing that we set up. It's just, if it's due and coming to them and they discover it 2 days after the date or even a month after the date, just don't like the idea of us saying, well, next year you know the date, and then we meet in between then, we change the date, and they get ready for something. The level of understanding of those who have the time to sit around a table like this and meditate on these programs is one thing. But for the people out there that are on the green chain right now instead of sitting here, it's another thing. And, I'd like to give the director the ability to use that hardship liberally as opposed to restraining it.
Your only problem is that Clackamas County says the reason their role was so far behind and the districts got all screwed up on their rates is that the date was so far back that they couldn't get the role. So that's what you're running into. The problem.
You don't announce it until after the date.
Right.
You don't say we're going to have an extension.
The reason for the dates, as they are now, is that, again, these are, in effect, refunds, whereas these are prospective, and so you really have to get it in at some time before the assessor closes a roll to get it to work properly. And April 1 might not be the best date, but...
In fact, this could be used to solve the whole capital punishment dilemma. Anybody convicted of a capital crime and sentenced to die, if they could recite this matrix, it's off. You live. And we'd just see how many people could memorize it.
That's the way it is now. And you're going to get another thing in here, too, this session, I'm sure. Or if not this session, next session, is that there are penalties for failing to not notify the assessor when your property is no longer in homestead status. And there are going to be people that have to pay those penalties. Because if you don't notify them before the next tax roll rolls around, you're now renting this house and you moved out.
Yeah, and we go right back to those real estate people.
You may not even sell a house. You may just
turn it into a rental.
I know, but you're probably moving. And you're probably going through a real estate agent who, in every transaction, they need to bring those things up. Probably what we need to do is have the department publish a little brochure or something to give to real estate people that says, here are your, not only your good points, but some of the bad points about your tax system. There are assets and liabilities. Better understand. Because I could see how easily somebody could forget to go down and tell the assessor that I've got a rental now. I mean, you're busy. People are just not, I mean, they're taxpayers, but they're not professional taxpayers. And I could just see how that could easily happen.
The assessors do have a way of knowing if you sell the house, and then when you sell it, the new person has to apply.
Yeah, but if you just built another house and rented your old house,
that's
happened.
Assessor won't know, unless you tell him. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, I think the assessors even have a bill in to require them to notify people that they've been disqualified and give them some time period to refile. But even then, that won't handle the case that we're talking about there where the assessor doesn't know. That's pretty much what I had on the heart.
questions? Jim, how long will your energy discussion take?
I can take as long as you want.
We're about 15 minutes or 10 minutes.
Okay, we can. Well, we can get into it. At least okay. It's pretty easily divided up into sections.
I want to arrange so we can get through timber tomorrow.
Yeah, so maybe we should just try to get through this. I'm sure you're going to see a lot of energy stuff, and you'll basically all I can do here now is say where we are right now. But
yeah, there's a research report in there, which is in the process of being updated, but the information in there is still accurate. The update is mainly giving you more current figures. The way I think of it, I think it's the easiest in looking at our tax and loan incentives. And there are basically four types. So they deal with four types of property. You have the residential weatherization incentives. You have residential alternative energy devices. You have business incentives. And you have the motor fuel incentives. Now, within these types, this memo deals with not only state but federal incentives and some local incentives. Within each type, they're divided into income tax incentives or credits, and then weatherization or loan programs within each one of these categories, and then property tax incentives. So in the weatherization end of it, we have income tax credits, both federal and state. And we have a number of loan programs that are listed there. And you have some figures there on the participation in all of those. On the tax credit, it shows there are 32,000 taxpayers claimed the Oregon weatherization credit last in 78. That figure went to about almost 70,000 in 79. And as you know, the governor is recommending repealing the credit this biennium and is estimating about $15.5 million will be saved by doing that. It would otherwise sunset in 85. On the weatherization loan program, the two sort of state, there's two sort of subsidized loan programs other than the veterans program that work at the state level are the private electric utility loan program, where they include the subsidy in their rate base. That's PGE and PP&L primarily. And then there's the tax credit subsidized loan program, where the borrower goes to some lender, like a bank or savings and loan, borrows the money to make the weatherization improvement. The lending institution lends the money at 6.5%. Claims a tax credit on their Oregon corporate income tax return or excise tax return equal to the difference between a 6.5% interest rate and their normal home improvement loan rate, up to a maximum subsidy of 5.5%. Now that means that the net interest rate they're getting is 12%, which is pretty low right now, and so there's not a lot of participation in it. In fact, the only participation that we're getting right now is through the gas company, and what's happening there is the gas company is further subsidizing the loans to make them attractive to the lenders. And those programs have also grown fairly dramatically, and I didn't bring the darn numbers with me this time, but all those figures that you see there have more than doubled since the participation you see there now through December 31st, 79. If you put in one more year through December 31st, 1980, the number of loans are going to have more than doubled on every one of those. And then in the new updated report, I've added a section for the City of Portland's loan program that they're just beginning. They haven't made any loans in yet. This memo, by the way, you can see there are little sections at the end of each one of these sections that talk about the combination of benefits that you can put together, whether you can get a loan and a credit at the same time. The federal government in the windfall profit bill changed a lot of those provisions with federal credits and made it a lot harder to put together things. If you had a state finance loan, you can't get the credit anymore, that kind of thing. So a lot of those kinds of changes have been made. That's pretty much the weatherization as we can get into the time available. On the alternative energy device, you'll see the Oregon income tax credit for alternative energy devices. It's 25% of costs up to $1,000 per unit served by the device, and you have to get certification by the Department of Energy. I think they have a bill in this time to make that credit refundable, since many people can't claim the whole thing in the first year because they don't have $1,000 of tax liability.
That's in the governor's budget, I think.
Yes. Well, except they never made an estimate of what it would cost to do that.
Yeah, they did. They had a figure, I think.
They had a figure for the bill, but the calculation that they had made did not include that feature of it. And so, in fact, they had never... Nobody's ever conducted a study to find out, so I know they didn't do the estimate.
The program exists, and the only change is that you're giving a refund. So the only change, what you're saying is that the figure they gave us was simply for continuing the program, but did not add the refundable nature?
No, they were going to, by administrative rule, allow some more things to be eligible for.
And that's what
that figure reflected.
So there's another one. What do we call those? Not tin cans.
Gotchas.
I know from talking to them that they've never made an estimate of what that would cost, and I don't really know how you would do it without pulling a sample of returns, which were... I just talked to Sue Martinez over at the department today about, because they were going to pull a sample for the Department of Energy for some other purposes of being sure that they did something on that so we can get an estimate.
Call them chits. So you can all go together.
Then
you, Chet.
Conversation goes on. We'll
how do you spell it?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's going to be.
We get a little
that
yellow.
That may change as the session goes on.
That's what I mean. I thought it was the best part of time to describing it a little later day.
Then there is the geothermal heating district credit or connection credit that nobody's claimed yet. That just basically gets you around the provision of certification. And I think they have a new bill in to for wind measuring credit that's similar to this. And on the alternative energy loans, there is a similar tax credit subsidized program that there's been very little participation in because not only of the 12% interest rate, but also because we made a little technical mistake when we drafted it, where we sunsetted the subsidies and not the new loans. So that lenders were in the position, even if they wanted to make the loan, that the way the law read, that the subsidy would run out even before the loan did. So there's a bill in to fix that. It's being heard right now over in House Energy. And then there's the Measure 3 on the May primary ballot, small scale, that allows state bonding for small scale energy projects that pass. And then thirdly, there's a property tax exemption for alternative energy property. And in effect says that the assessor will assess property as if these alternative energy devices did not exist. So that if you have a house with a solar panel on a roof, he's not going to count the solar panel in the value. He's going to value just as if it were a normal house without that.
Chairman, I've gotten a lot of comments from constituents that were considering weatherizing their homes, you know, storm windows, double painting and the whole thing, and the reason they were hesitant to do that was because it would increase their assessment. And I was wondering whether or not we might want to go that route, the property tax exemption route, for increased value due to weatherization, or whether or not we might want to at least look into it. We do it with urban renewal. You know, we defer the cost of improvements for 10 years and so on for urban renewal, you know, there'd have to be a sunset on it, but it appears to me that allowing people a 10-year or some other year exemption on the increased value that they add when they weatherize might be an appropriate incentive.
I think the law is sort of halfway in between that right now, because the way the law reads now, weatherization, like anything else, like patching your floor up or that kind of thing, is called deferred maintenance. And the assessor cannot increase your value specifically because you did that. They can, however, in the normal reappraisal cycle, as they go around and look at the houses, and as they sort of grade the house according to what general class that it's in, will take into account the general appearance of the house and its state of repair and that kind of thing. And the weatherization does get sort of a subjective part of that judgment that's made on the part of the appraisers to the general condition of the house.
Well, whether it in reality is a serious problem or not, it appears to me that it would be a good political move, you know, for us to pass legislation to defer that. That way people wouldn't be able to use that as an excuse for not weatherizing.
The problem you have is then you have to develop a list of things that qualify and things that do not qualify.
The method of valuing
it. And
well, the method of valuing is up to the assessor. Yeah, but I would think that things like new windows and doors, for sure ought to count.
But if you're simply postponing, you really build in an administrative problem. Is you say this person. If you have a 10-year deferment, for example, or something like that, I think credit, although a credit might not answer that particular complaint administratively, that would be tough if the assessor's got to, wait 10 years and then go out and reappraise, in essence, to bring that up. Wouldn't that be a...
You can't
mark on the file in 10 years this window will be worth 1.6 times what I got on my worksheet, because somebody could have thrown a ball through the window and ruined the frame, and you went back to the regular kind of deal. So, they're going to have to physically reappraise, I would think.
Yeah, well, I would like to hear from the assessors. I think it's something worth pursuing, because I've heard that from enough places that that's one of the things that's causing people to hesitate to weatherize. And I think that I serve on the Energy Committee as well, and I think it's very important that we do everything possible within reason, fiscal reason.
That we can afford,
yeah. And that's something that wouldn't cost us anything, because it would just be a slight shift here and there. It wouldn't cost the state, wouldn't cost any general fund.
You know what I think would do more in the energy-related field than any credits and expenditures we make? If the state would simply buy every one of the new devices that they have now that you put on your thermostat, that in digital big letters it's telling you the cost of the energy you're using, and they've got them now, so that you go down the hall, you're cooking, two kids are taking a shower, and the door's open in the front, it's telling you, just like you're staying at the gas pump,
so much per
what
hour.
It's costing right now, just like that. I think that would do more to close the doors and to insulate and to keep the fireplace damper closed and to put in those windows than just about anything we could do with the series of credits that some people understand and some people have a hard time understanding. I don't know. It's really getting hard to keep up with all of them.
Certainly is a hard, it's a full-time job to sit there and keep track of everything that's happened.
Property tax assessment, though, and people's fear of increasing the value of their, the assessed value of their property, is a real bugaboo.
Well, I tell my wife every year, I'm not going to paint this house.
You don't admit you're just plain lazy. Of course, the increased taxes.
That's right. Can't have that new furniture. What if the assessor got in?
Doesn't work at your household, no bad.
never work in life.
He says, but these orange grades, they're going out back.
Well, Jim, I think we're going to have to stop there. Some of us have other committee assignments. We'll start here tomorrow and finish that up and go into 10.
Okay, it shouldn't take more than 5 minutes.
Okay. Finish that.